Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He's speaking to us from beautiful Calgary, Alberta. Welcome back to the show, Joseph.
My pleasure, Jim. Good to be with you again.
Joseph, you were one of the keynote speakers at the Economic Conference in Vancouver last weekend. What was the nexus, the little gem in the middle of the whole talk that you presented?
Well, in mine, it was that I think that after a little more downside in the price of oil, we're going to have one of the best buying opportunities we've had since March of 2020. Natural gas prices, of course, you know, the high this year was $10, and now we're looking at $2.40 for NYMEX, and, you know, similar kind of number for AECO in Canada. Oil prices were $130, you know, after the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. Now it's in the $77 range. So I think that natural gas prices are very close to their bottom. Oil prices might need a dip below 70. And the reason you'll get a dip below 70 is we've now had, I think, 4 weeks of data where the inventories have been building and there's no SPR draw. So we're having a big increase in storage. So just to give you the numbers from Wednesday's EIA report, the storage increased by 2.4 million barrels to 455.1 million, and that's up 44.7 or 10.9% from a year ago. So we're getting inventory builds. The other thing is U.S. domestic production went up 100,000 last week to 12.3 million, and that's up from 11.6 million a year ago, or 700,000 barrels, which is a 6% increase. So we have increasing storage for commercial crude oil. We have domestic production going up. And then the third piece of the puzzle is U.S. demand. And U.S. demand is 20.5 million last week, down from 21.9 a year ago, which is down 6.1%. So we're getting a mixture of a build in inventories. And this time of year, you usually don't get it because it's winter. But because of the mild nature of the winter, we're seeing inventories build. And that's why I think one more downside here. That'll give us some great buying opportunities. And the stocks that have been hit the most are the natural gas stocks. So there's bargains galore now. We get a little more of a dip in oil, because every natural gas company has liquids as well. That'll give us a very, very exciting and attractive buying opportunity. And we're gearing that up with our writing to our subscribers get your buy list ready. We're getting very, very close to one of the best buying opportunities since March of 2020.
Would you be outlining those choices, those buying opportunities, in your upcoming energy report?
That's correct. Yeah, we do that. We do twice a month an energy report, which people can go to www.schachterenergyreport.ca, and we have two choices: quarterly or annual subscriptions. And you know, every once in a while, once or twice a year, we do, you know, a marketing thing, which we did with you guys, if you recall. Right now it's regular pricing, and we also do a complimentary piece. If people would like just the macro overview of the sector, when you go to that website and subscriptions, we have something called Eye on Energy, which is a macro piece, which is complimentary, free. We're free, so people can subscribe to that. And if they'd like the data on the individual companies, then it's the paid product.
Now, what is the overall health of the Canadian petroleum industry?
Well, for the most part, companies have had are spending less than their cash flow, and they're paying down debt. Some of them that have good balance sheets have been paying regular dividends and extra dividends or variable dividends. And NCIBs have been a very big part of it. Normal course issuer bids, where people buy back their stock. So we've seen, the sector do very well, especially in the first half of 2022, and then the second half of 2022, deterioration set in. And again, you know, what is going to happen to the economy is the bottom line. Do you believe in soft landing and growth in the second half of the year, soft landing in the first half, or do you believe that inflation is persistent and that the Fed's going to have to raise rates higher? And, you know, you listen to Powell's comments with his press conference last week, and then, you know, his interview, I believe, just in two days ago. You're getting a mixed signals on what the Fed's going to do. We're 4.75 on the Fed funds rate. The bulls are saying, well, peak's 5.1, so, you know, one more rate increase of 25 basis points is going to be it. You've got others out there saying, no, the inflation is persistent, the wage growth is there, the labor, you know, you saw the jobs number, you know, 517,000. I think they were looking for 165 for the month of January. That was reported last Friday. So there are concerns on the wage front and on the labor front that may mean that we may need to see interest rates closer to 6% on the Fed funds rate, which means 125 basis points higher before we see the slowdown that people are looking for. So to me, we're sitting with a mixed view of the economy, and until we get more clarity on, you know, are we going to see more robust rate rises than the market is discounting? And there's a difference between the bond market and the stock market. The bond market has an inversion, which is the sharpest inversion we've seen in terms of the short rates versus long rates. And historically, when you have that inversion, it's bearish for the economy, and usually we head into recession, like we did in 08, 09, and, 2000. And the inversion now is the sharpest between, let's say, 3-month money and 10-year money that we've ever seen. And that historically, means a slowing economy, which, brings us into recession. And overall money supply is negative as well. So, the liquidity in the system, so you got the price of money up and the amount of liquidity in the system both going against you. But the data is not clear yet, sufficiently to, and so the bond market is saying recession, stock market up to today, is saying, the economy's okay and earnings are going to be stronger in the second half and, the market can go up, into year end. That's really the dichotomy that we're facing. I'm in the view that we're probably going to see recessionary conditions, and earnings are going to be weaker for the S&P and the Dow and the TSX, which means we're going to see somewhat lower prices during Q1, Q2 for the general stock market. And not everything bottoms at the same time. So my view is probably the energy sector bottoms during Q1.
We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. Is there kind of an energy war developing between Canada and the U.S.? The first thing President Biden did when he hit office was cancel the XL pipeline that would have carried Alberta oil down to Louisiana to be processed. Then when gasoline prices went crazy in the U.S., he asked 14 countries, including China, to up their production to keep prices down. But I don't think Canada was asked to do that. Does Joe Biden hate Canada's energy sector, or just Canada in general?
Well, I think it's a continental thing. He doesn't really like the U.S.'s, expansion on the Eagleford and the Permian and allowing federal lands in New Mexico to be drilled, Alaska, North Slope, where there's potential for more oil. Nothing, has been moved forward there. Pipeline approvals, the slowdown of LNG export terminals. The big problem is pipelines into the northeast of the United States so they can get natural gas. They'd rather be importing. In the old days, they were importing from Russia. You know, maybe they're going to import from Qatar or other places. You know, so it's you know, really a government that's anti-fossil fuels. You know, their view seems to be, oh, Venezuela, you know, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, why don't you go back there and develop their heavy oil resources and bring that oil into the Gulf of Mexico? Or, you know, they say to the Middle East OPEC countries, oh, produce more oil and we'll buy it from you, rather than allowing domestic production, which is probably the most, you know, energy efficient, you know, climate friendly, and using the latest technologies to have the best practices. And the Middle East doesn't do that, and Venezuela, of course, probably doesn't even bring that into the equation. And so it's very disconcerting. And you know, also, you know, the one wild card that came out today was that a New York Times reporter came out and said that the attack on the Nord Stream pipeline was done by the United States government or the military with help of Norway. They did it for two reasons. One, of course, to block you know, Russian exports into Europe and get Germany on side, because once the pipeline was blown, Germany couldn't get gas from Russia, and that's why they became more hawkish to help Ukraine. And then the other one is to, you know, get the the U.S. LNG market on the Gulf Coast, so that you know, more and more money would come in the doors of, you know, into the United States to help on the balance of payments issue, and take Europe off of dependence from Russia and make them more dependent on the U.S. So, you know, it's like there's no consistency in the American energy policy, and you know, with this stuff that came out today on Nord Stream, you know, I think, you know, that's an act of war by the United States. And, you know, now you saw Germany sending Leopard tanks, and you know, Britain now talking about sending you know, planes. You know, I think there's going to be an escalation in activity in the fighting in Ukraine, and I think that's something to be concerned about. And, you know, because if that gets much more uglier and they use more offensive weapons, I think that's going to be something that will bother the markets as well.
The Alberta petroleum situation, rig counts, jobs in the sector, how's that?
Well, right now it's gone really, really well. We're at almost a record drill count now in terms of activity. The data that came out last week showed that the Canadian rig count was 249 rigs, up 14% from a year ago when we had 218 working. Most people in the industry tell me that the maximum capacity with labor is between 250 and 260 rigs. So we're getting right up there. You know, the problem is labor. Getting people who want to work out in the field. You know, it's, you know, these are pretty long days, 12 hours on, 12 hours off, 20 days in the field working, 10 days off. So it's a young person's business, and you need to be trained well. And the training takes a while, but, you know, these are six-figure jobs. But with the low unemployment rate across the country, it's hard to attract the people. So they've been, you know, marketing all the way into Atlantic Canada. They're looking wherever they can, to bring the people on that they need. And I think we're getting to the point where, you know, companies in the E&P space, explorers and producers, they're trying to lock down the rigs that they like with the crews that they like, because they don't want to have a crew that doesn't have the experience with the rig, or they don't want a rig that they haven't worked with before. So contract terms are going longer, and the price, the day rates for rigs are going up. And, you know, the Precision Drilling had their conference call today, and, you know, the average day rate was $33,000, I think, in the quarter. But the newest rigs, the best part of their fleet, pricing is in the $40,000 per day. So margins are improving for the companies, but all of them have significant debt. So the cash flow that comes in after maintenance and growth capex has to be spent on knocking the debt down. Precision Drilling today, with their announcement, didn't make the market happy. I'm just going to go to pull out the quote, but it was a very big down day for them. The stock was down 14.1%, 1365 to 8330, for two reasons. One, the numbers weren't as good as expected, and they were the share compensation portion of their announcement was higher than the market had expected. And when they started the press conference or the webcast, the stock was down 10%. It rallied just a little bit, but then after the webcast, it got got beat up again. And at the end of the day, down 14% in one day. So the market can be very punishing if you have disappointing results, either on guidance or the numbers are bad, or, you know, when they answer the Q&A, and they don't give the right kind of the answers the market needs. You know, we saw Mattel get beat up today. We saw Credit Suisse get beat up today. So, if the market's disappointing, they just take it out right away.
Is there a lot of lithium recovery from old oil wells?
That's becoming something where people are getting more optimistic from the brines and the drilling. The question is, how are the economics there? There is, of course, a lot of companies trying to get into that space because, of course, the lithium is Australia and South America right now. Of course, you want to have it in Canada. I think that's going to be a growth area. I don't know enough about it, but every once in a while you see announcements of companies drilling, especially in Saskatchewan for lithium, sometimes in Alberta, and we'll have to wait and see if that turns into anything meaningful. At this point, it's more of an R&D kind of thing, research and development, exploratory to see if the numbers make sense. But the market, the companies involved have been able to attract capital to investigate and see if this becomes something that's a viable business.
Anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Well, I think the big issue is going to be, from the U.S. side, do they get that debt, limit raised, and do they, what are they going to do on cuts if there are any? The politics, in the States is getting close to election season again. And, in Alberta, we've got election season coming in May. So, is the UCP going to get elected, or is it going to be the NDP? Federally, we got an election coming next year, I think. So, what happens there and the politics of that related to energy? And then, of course, the U.S., the Congress is divided with the Republicans controlling the House and the Senate with the Democrats. And, of course, Biden not being very friendly to the energy industry. So the politics of oil in North America, in the next year or two, is something to keep an eye on. Hopefully we get a more positive atmosphere for it because the industry is not spending enough worldwide. And if the demand this year is 100 million, and while the OECD countries may see declines in demand in the years ahead because of electric vehicles and fuel efficiency, et cetera, and renewables, the non-OECD world, the emerging world, where all these, where lithium and cobalt and nickel and copper, all the inputs we need for the renewable world that we want to see, they're going to use a lot more fossil fuels to build those mines for people to have to drive for the quality of life that they want to have, in South America, Africa, in parts of Asia. That the overall demand for energies can be 106 to 108 million barrels by the end of this decade, which means the industry has to just start spending more money to develop the increase. And the bottom line is, the decline rate is between 5 and 7%. So they need to replace 5 to 7 million barrels every year just to stand still. And if they want to have this growth, that means at some point we need to bring on 10 million barrels a day of new capacity. That's not happening. And I think if we don't see a change in government attitude, then all of us are going to be paying a lot more for our home heating, if it's natural gas or driving or whatever. All of that is going to be much more expensive if we don't start spending money efficiently and with all the latest and best climate efficiency so that people can see that we are focusing on methane and CO2, et cetera, et cetera. To make North America the climate leader, hopefully that gets picked up internationally and everybody goes to the high quality standards that we have in North America.
satellite data shows methane leaks mostly happen along the Russian natural gas pipelines. How much methane do we accidentally release in Canada?
I don't know the data, but I would say it's minuscule relative to what's going on in Russia, simply because the standards here and the requirements to get pipelines approved and all of the rules that you have to follow by the provinces and federally if it's across provincial pipelines. So I think that we should be getting a pat on the back in Canada and North America for the environmental standards that we're using. Other countries in China and in Russia just are not doing that. And they're using more coal in Germany. You just see things going on in the world which you know 2 years ago, coal was going to be shut down and nuclear facilities are going to be shut down, and now because of the shortage and the war, those are all being used, and there's new coal-fired facilities being built every day in India and China simply because there's no other option, and they need electricity to keep their economies growing. So it's a pretty sad state of affair in those areas. And for all the things we do to clean up things in North America, they're polluting way, way more. And of course, the flow of air from, west to east, India and China, the quality of air, in BC may start realizing that they may be impacted at some point. Fortunately, I've got the mountains to protect us here.
Joseph, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure as always, Jim. Take good care.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from Calgary. If you have any questions for Joseph or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.